ओम सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्वी नावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ओम शांति शांति शांति। दृशांत केनो उपनिषद पार्ट वन मंत्र 1-5 केनेशितं पतति प्रेषितं मनः केन प्राण प्रथम प्रैति युक्तः केनेशितां वाचमिमां वदन्ति चक्षुश्रोत्रं कवुदेवो युनक्ति श्रोत्रस्य श्रोत्रं मनसो मनो यत् वाचोह वाचगुंसवु प्राणस्य प्राणः चक्षुषः चक्षुरतिमुच्य धीराः वेत्यास्मालोकाधमृता भवन्ति न तत्र चक्षुर्गच्छति न वाग्गच्छति नो मनो न विद्मो न विजानीमो यतैतदनुशिष्यात् अन्यदेव तद्विदितादतो अविदितादति इति शुश्रुम पूर्वेषां येनस्तद्व्याचचक्षिरे यद्वा दानव्युदितं येन वा गभ्युद्यते तदेव ब्रह्मत्वं विद्धि नेदं यदिदमुपासते। केन उपनिषत् स्टार्ट्स विद द स्टूडेंट्स क्वेश्चन विच बिगिन्स विद द वर्ड केन। केन मीन्स बाय हूम, by whom propelled, that's the question he asks. From the question we saw that we can know how much the student knows and how much the student doesn't know. Until and unless we speak, and especially when we maintain silence, people may think we are very wise. But the moment we start speaking, then they will come to know how much we know, how much we don't know. So here the student is asking the question, kene shitam? Kena ishitam patasi preshitam manaha. Kena prana pratama praiti yuktaha. Kena ishitam vacham imam patanti. Chakshuru shrotram kau devo yunati. So, the student has analyzed the senses, the organs of perception. The student has analyzed the organs of action, the pranas, the mind, the intellect. He has completely, thoroughly analyzed everything. Then he has understood that the senses and the mind, which includes intellect, per se are insentient. They are not sentient. There is something other than the insentient senses, mind and intellect seems to activate it. Who is that? That's his question. Is it something completely apart from the senses, or is it something that is part of the senses, mind, intellect? Is it apart or is it apart? So his question, the fact that it's about the consciousness, he uses the word kau devaha. Devaha means divine, illuminator, conscious being. That's what devaha means. Something divine, illuminator, that which illumines. It has to be light, consciousness, knowledgeable. So that knowledge principle, what we call as consciousness, is it apart or apart? He is very clear. These are all insentient. And the world is also made up of the five Mahabhutas, space, air, fire, water, earth, and The senses are also made up of the same five Panchamahabhutas. The Panchamahabhutas are per se not conscious, insentient. So if this body is made up of the same Panchamahabhutas, then that is obviously gross and not sentient. Then today I am seeing, the Guru is talking, I am hearing. I am seeing the sights, color and form. I am smelling, I am tasting, I am touching. So the senses seems to be having life. But per se they are made up of these five elements. Then what is giving them that life? That's his question. If you think it is mind, what is mind? Mind is nothing but the subtle body. From the subtle body, the gross body comes, isn't it? When our thoughts change, our body changes. The selection of your frame for your glass also changes. When your thoughts in a particular way, then you will need different kind of a frame. You know, some fluffy. We are not saying it's good or bad. It's just to do with the thoughts. Whether it is selection of clothes or, you know, your glass, sunglass, everything. Because the thoughts are the subtle from which the gross comes. So if this gross body, which is made up of five elements, is there, we can see it should have come from subtle body, which also should have been made from the same five elements, could have been subtle elements. That's okay. But they are also five elements only. If that is so, then they are also fundamentally insentient. So therefore, he eliminates the physical body, the five sense organs, five organs of action. He eliminates the pranas, he eliminates the mind and intellect. The entire subtle body and the gross body. Then what is that conscious principle which is illumining? If it is a part or is it a part? Is it independent or it is dependent? Or is it a product? So the question that comes is it a product or a part or something apart? That's his question. Then he says, Kena Ishitam Patati Manaha Preshitam. So, what is that by whom propel does this function? So, which means it's a very clear sign that the student is an extremely evolved person and adhikari. He is done with the world in one go. He is understood. These are all insentient. Why would I, if I am intelligent, why would I want to gather insentient stuff around me? Okay, let me put it little gross then to understand this. Would you collect dead bodies around you? Unless you have some psychological problem. You won't collect dead bodies around you. But what are we doing in the world? We are only collecting all this dead material. This is per se dead. What does it, have any value? It has no value. What would be the value for this body once the life has left this body? There is no value. In a relative sense, when you are holding a certain position, when you have left the seat, there is no value for the personality. You go and ask all these people who work in different departments of the government in a very high position. The IAS officers and all of them. I have met quite a few of them and they say, sir, tomorrow I am retiring. I am very clear in my head. Thanks to Vedanta and all that. Nobody is going to respect me per se. So I understood that the respect is for the chair. So, if you had conducted yourself magnanimously, properly as a human being while you were sitting on the chair, then even after you have left, maybe there will be some people who will respect you. So what is that which is adding respect to you? It's this life, these positions, these values. Without all of them, if you are just collecting the material stuff, you are just collecting dead bodies around you. So this student, through this analysis, is an adhikari, we can understand that. So he is not enamored by the senses. He is, in one word, he said, This is not the Deva. There is some other Deva. So I am interested in that which adds value. I should know, no, what is actually giving me value? Why am I being respected? I should understand that. See, as a cricketer, when these guys go abroad, even in India, especially when they go abroad, I mean, the kind of hero worship they have is something else. People just flock around them, they want to take pictures, and then they invite them for lunch, dinner, and then they take them around for shopping, they give them expensive watches and this and that. They just shower them with all kinds of gifts. Now, why are they getting all these accolades? It's because of their talent, their effort, their discipline. That's why a lot of companies come and sign them for contracts. 100 crores contract has been signed by so-and-so cricketer, they say. Now, what is that? It's because of those things. And if he doesn't understand that, it has happened actually to some of the cricketers, I believe. They haven't understood that. They got enamored by this following and all that. And then they left the... They didn't, I mean, put in that much effort in their discipline and efforts in their tapas. So they slowly, slowly lost the form. And then that's it. Nobody is following them now. So this is what is understood. There is something else which is giving value. That is the only thing worthy of gaining. That is what I am interested in. So if you want to check what kind of a person or a character a person is, you want to check what are his or her values. What do they value? Do you just value the insentient dead things, or do you value the sentient things? What do you value? That shows what kind of character are you. So this student has clearly asked this question. I want to know about that. So his question is simple. It's like, this something is there which is making this conscious. And that something, is it a part, or is it an apart, or is it a product? Once they come together, the subtle and the gross, is it coming as a product? Or is it a part of it that manifests at that time? Or is it something apart from it? That's his question. And then the guru is answering. If you see in this Keno Upanishad, there is no student to watch, there is no guru to watch, there is nothing. Straight away coming to the point. If somebody is invited to give a talk, especially in Rotary when they invite us, it is hardly 20 minutes they give. Only 20 minutes they are supposed to talk. Only one Rotary they allowed me to talk for 1 hour. The first only they said, sir, you have 1 hour, you can talk. There are many places in Rotary only 20 minutes. A 20 minutes talk, but many of them, firstly the person who is introducing only takes about 2 minutes to introduce you. And then you yourself will say, I don't know, I am seeing all the great people here sitting. I don't know if I am eligible to talk in front of you. Who asked about all that? Straight away, come to the point, talk. If you think you are not eligible, don't go there. You accepted to talk, go talk, that's it. No need for all this nonsense. So if you see here in Keno Upanishads, no student vacha, no guru vacha, nothing. Straight away the guru comes and says, Shrotrasya Shrotram. Upanishad is over in these words. Even in this... In this mantra, somebody's, I think, microphone is on. Please put yourself in mute. Or the host, can you put them in mute? I can't put them in mute. I don't have the permission to do it. Do I? No, I don't.
Only the host can do it, I think.
Yeah. Or I think you yourself can do it. So
yeah, we can do it.
Yourself yourself. In mute.
Yeah, we can do it.
Yeah. So, the guru is answering Shrotrasya Shrotram. Then his other things are all same. Manaso mano vacho havasaham sa pranasya pranaha chakshusha chakshu. All that is same. But the answer he gives is Shrotrasya Shrotram. Keno Upanishad Khatam Ho Gaya. See, that is the problem. We study 18 chapters in Bhagavad Gita and all that. And here we come to Kheno Upanishad. Shishya asked one question and the Guru answered it, Srotrasya Srotram, Hovya. Then after answering that, the next line, he says, what are the effects of that jnana? Jnana phalam. Path katam. The whole Upanishad is over in this one verse. Srotrasya Srotram. Manaso mano. Vachoha vachahun. Pranasya pranaha. Chakshushas chakshu. So, the ear of the ear. Eye of the eye. Prana of the prana. Mind of the mind. Mind of the mind. Here the mind includes mind and intellect. So, mind of the mind and intellect. Both. So, the entire organs of perception, organs of action, pranas, mind, intellect, everything is put as an effect. And he says, that's the cause. So, shrotrasya, shrotra. Ear of the ear. Which means, this is not the ear. In fact, people who can't hear properly, the deaf and dumb, blind people, all of them, they have the physical dvalaya. The physical ear is there, the physical eyes are there in them also. But the subtle sense center, there is some problem. So that is the real ear, that is the real eye. So he is talking about ear of that ear, ear of that eye. So that means what? It is even the lending source of consciousness for that sense center also. So from that this has come, Srotrasya Srotram. But that is independent. To show that, he puts it in this way. So the way, because what was the question the Shishya asked when we analyzed the question? Is it independent? Is it apart? Is consciousness apart? Or is consciousness apart? Or is it a product? That's the question. When you analyze the question, it comes like that. Guru understood that. And the Guru is answering, it is neither a product nor apart. It is apart. Apart from it. It is independent. It is satyam. Satyam and mithya. Satya means independent. Mithya means dependent. Table is dependent on wood. That is mithya. It has a form and the name is table. You can, you know, break it and make something else out of it. The form will change, the name will also change. It's mithya. But the satya, the table, sorry, the wood, satya, the wood, is not dependent on the table, not chair, nothing. It is independent. So, Srotrasya Srotra. That's the source. From that source, this has come. So, when something has come from that, that means what? It existed even before this came into being. Are you getting it? We have to go and do all this analysis. Guru doesn't do all this. We have the luxury of this analysis in this weekly class. That's why sometimes I feel all these Upanishads, now we should stop teaching. The luxury is everything is spoon-fed. Oh, fantastic, fantastic. Okay, super, super. When shall we start the next Upanishad? What as if some Upanishad is going to say something else? The same thing it is saying. Shrotrasya Shrotram. The source of this Shrotram. That means what? The source should have been the first, no? Source comes first. Mother, father comes first. Then the child comes. And mother, father existed even before the child came into being. But only in this mother-father-child relationship something nonsense happens. What is that? Mother and father came first. They existed before the children came into being. But once the child comes into being, mother-father becomes completely dependent on the child. Whereas the real father of this world or mother of this world is a source and consciousness. From that consciousness, this whole thing has come about. In some Upanishads, the Krama is also explained. Like for example, when we go to Mundaka Upanishad, which we will see also. In that Mundaka Upanishad, he talks, you know, tapasya chiyate brahma is it. From Brahman, how through Krama this universe has come. He explains that. Here in one line he says, Shrotra Chas Shrotra, which means that only. But you have to go sit and do all the homework. So when you do the homework, when you understand the question, then you understand the answer. You are talking in code language. So Shrotrasya Shrotram means this is the effect. One Shrotra is the effect, the other Shrotra is the cause. So if you see Swamiji's book in the translation, ear of the ear. So that first ear he will put in E capital. The next ear he will put in small letter. That ear with small letter is a sense center. Okay. But the ear with capital letter is the pure consciousness. In the Swamiji's book, in my book it is page number 25. He has given the diagram there. The tabular column. Left hand side is Supreme Self. Right hand side is organs of perception and all that. So Supreme Self, pure consciousness, Atman, Brahman, changeless, imperishable, transcendent. So that Brahman is the Supreme Self in the individual, which is in the form of pure consciousness. It is the Atman, and with reference to microcosm, the same thing with reference to macrocosm, you use the word Brahman. And it is changeless, the world is changing. Whereas Brahman is changeless, it is imperishable, the entire universe is perishable, the senses are perishable, mind is perishable, everything perishes. This is imperishable. Not only that, it is transcendent. It is beyond, it is apart, it is independent. It exists independent of all the senses, prana, mind, intellect, everything. All this has evolved from that consciousness. So now the question is, how is it possible? Can the effect come from the cause? There are two kinds of cause-effect we know. One cause-effect is the pots made out of clay or gold ornaments made out of gold. Now, the cause gold itself is being made into different forms and given different names. This is the cause-effect relationship we know, one cause-effect. The other cause-effect relationship that we know is, there is a rope lying on the ground, you don't see the rope as a rope. Then, from the not understanding of the rope, the misunderstanding of the snake is projected. So, the misunderstanding snake is not come about like the pots have come about from clay. But this is also, here also you say rope is the cause. Actually speaking, if you go deeply, it's not rope that is the cause. The cause is ignorance of the rope, which we call as Maya when it comes to Brahman. So what the Shastras tell us is, Brahman, which is pure consciousness, the inherent potential Shakti is in Brahman, being infinite. When Brahman identifies with that potential, becomes Ishvara, then that potential is Triguna Atmika, Sattva Rajas Tamas. That Sattva Rajas Tamas manifests as the subtle body, organs of perception, organs of action, and the tamas aspect comes as the gross world, the gross body. So the entire universe has come from that Brahman only. Brahman and Brahman only. So therefore, Shrotrasya Shrotram, from the imperishable, this perishable has come. But it has come not like the parts have come from clay. It is come like snake has come from rope. So when we talk about the world, we say the world for which the material cause is also Brahman, the intelligent cause is also Brahman, because for everything there are two causes, material and intelligent cause. But Brahman has no reason to create this world. Brahman is independent. This we should understand. That's why he says Shrotrasya Shrotra. Which means what? We need this ear to hear that Brahman is not dependent of this ear. His ear to hear. He's going to explain that later on. Those verses are coming. Those are all explanations to verse number 3. First verse, question asked. Second verse, answer given. From verse number 3, they're all explanations of verse number 2. Sorry, I think before I said 3. It's explanation of verse number 2. All the other things are explanation of verse number 2. Those students who don't need explanations left the class. Others continued, so the guru continues. So what does he say? Shrotrasya Shrotram. Means this Shrotra, this small ear, came from the big ear. What does it mean? It means we, the individuals, cannot hear without that ear. But that ear or the consciousness is not dependent on this ear. But this ear is dependent on that. And this has come from that. But that existed even before this came. It can continue to exist before without its relationship. And it is living like that. But we don't know. We have no clue about it. If you add the clue, then you will also become independent of everything. But the fact that you don't have any clue, you are dependent on everything. So that's what he said. Shrotrasya Shrotram Manaso Mano Vachoha Vachagum Pranasya Pranaha Chakshusha Chakshu. And one who understands this, Ati Muchya Dhiraha. Dhiraha means wise person. And not only wise person, he is a brave person also. Why do I say he is a brave person? Because he questions what is obvious, what is believed by everyone. Nowadays when you go to any common place, especially a mall or something, and you go, you can see there they have written. What is that? Brave people wear masks. You know, because the belief is, I don't care about corona, I don't wear masks, I'm a brave guy. Brave, if you are a brave fellow, you should have brain. Veera, you know, the veer, the strength. Buddhi is the strength. Real strength is buddhi. If you are a strong person, you have buddhi, vivek. See, viveka should be there, otherwise you are not brave. Belief should go along with viveka. If viveka is not there, that not mean that is some kind of a mad thing. Not, see, children don't know anything about the snake, you know. So they won't get scared of the snake, they'll just go to play with it. I'm talking about very, very small children. So you can't say they are brave. They are ignorant. So real bravery means buddhi. So if you have buddhi, a dhiraha, a wise person, he is really brave. What does he do? What is appearing? What appears is, it's constantly changing. This is not the truth. Everything is coming and going, coming and going. See, that's why we need Shastra, that's why we need Guru. When you look at this world with your naked eye, it appears as if sun is coming and going. Earth is simply standing, nothing is happening to Earth. But the truth is Earth is revolving. You don't really feel as if you are revolving because you are sitting on the Earth. Therefore you say sun is rising, sun is setting. Similarly you say you know, what do you call this? Earth is flat. But actually Earth is not flat. Similarly, you say light is coming from the moon. There is no light coming from the moon. It's the sun's light that is getting reflected. I can go on and on like this. So the same thing, you've got to be brave not to go with what the general belief is or the perception is. You should be really smart enough to say, wait, whatever may be my inputs, I will question them. So that's why he says, the wise having completely freed how? By questioning. Ati Muchya, he is freed from all this. Freed from the changes. We think it's all changing. So I want to hold. Because if it changes, what happens? I must keep it. They did that with this corona also. The corona came, everybody is hoarding the masks and the foodstuffs. We saw all those kind of videos happening in America, not just in India, everywhere. I think India was better off that way. So, the kind of hoarding that people do, why? Because they are psyched by their observation. Changing. We all have that. But a wise person observes and is not disturbed by the change. It challenges the change. The change cannot affect him. That is why he is wise. That's what he means by he has become freed. For him in vain, the envious seasons roll, who bears eternal summer in his soul. A beautiful poem, I think it's by Samuel Coleridge. He says, for him in vain, the envious seasons rule, who bears eternal summer in his soul. In England, it's most of the time chilly, raining and all that. So people want to come out. When the sun comes, they like it. That's why they started this cricket and all that. But now this madness has gone to the level where they won't play cricket in Sharjah. Where it is too hot. So, they are looking forward, all the time they are talking about weather. We do that in Delhi also. Sarji, you know, hot, cold, all the time. So, they are affected by that. But he says, the seasons become envious. When they look at a person who is bearing that eternal summer in his soul. Seasons are thinking, this fellow is not complaining. They are going on changing and trying to do something to this guy. Hey, this fellow is not at all affected, man. Something different this fellow. So they become jealous, it seems. That's what Samuel Coleridge says. He's talking about that kind of a person. That's what freedom means. Freedom does not mean you don't feel hot. Freedom does not mean you don't feel cold. But you will not allow the heat and cold to affect you. You don't feel joy and sorrow, you are a piece of wood. But you should not allow the joy and sorrow to affect you. Not getting excited when joy comes or depressed when sorrow comes. So the Dhira, the wise fellow, through questioning, he's proved that he is a strong fellow. And being strong, he challenges the changes and he goes beyond the changes. What it means? Asti Muchya Dhira. Pretya Asmat Loka. Having risen from this world. What is this world? Pairs of opposites. Victory, defeat. Joy, sorrow. Honor, dishonor. Censure, praise. Heat, cold. Pleasure, pain. This is the world. So, risen above the world. Asmat Loka. Asmat Loka means what? He is risen above the pairs of opposites. We are all stuck to these pairs of opposites. And when we have stuck ourselves to these pairs of opposites means what? It's very, very interesting. When it is summer, we all look forward for air conditioners. When it is winter, we look forward for heaters. We heat the rooms. So what does this show? This only shows that we take one side. In winter, we resist cold. In summer, we resist heat. So when you are resisting heat, you are taking the side of the cold. But what we need to understand is, heat and cold are two sides of the same coin. Isn't it? Minus 10 degrees. If I ask you, is it cold or hot? Anybody?
Cold.
Minus 10 degrees is cold. Compared to minus 200 degrees, is minus 10 degree cold or hot?
Hotter than that.
Hotter. So,
perspective.
What you saw as hot is actually cold or hot. Depends how you look at it. That's how it is. What seems to be pleasure is pain. What seems to be pain is pleasure. They're inseparable. They're two sides of the same coin. So if you want to become free from pain, you got to become free from pleasure also. But what is happening in us psychologically? We want to free ourselves from pain only, all the time. Pleasure, we will get stuck to it. So whatever we think is pleasure, we stick to that. But what we don't understand is, that which gives us pleasure today will give us pain tomorrow. So the wise fellow becomes free from pain, he becomes free from pleasure also. If you are not free from pleasure, you can never become free from pain. See, it's coming in cyclic order. Pain comes, when you are seeing pain in front, what does it mean? Piche pleasure hai. We are only seeing the front pain. Front pain is there. But piche pleasure is there. That's why after some time this is revolving. When it rotates, the pain goes, pleasure. Now pleasure is in front. When pleasure is in front, pain is there behind. They are inseparable. Pairs of opposites are inseparable. So if you want to become free, you got to become free from both. That's the problem. You know, if you see somebody walking, all these guys who do that walking on the rope and all that, they will have a stick in their hand to balance themselves. They're walking on the rope. So they're balancing themselves using a bamboo stick or something. When that guy is walking, his focus is ahead. And sometimes when he is about to fall left side, to create balance, he may tilt towards right. Sometimes he is about to fall on the right side, he may tilt towards the left. He has neither interest to tilt towards the left, nor interest to tilt towards the right. His focus is all the time ahead, in front. But to keep balance, he'll go this side and that side. So similarly, in our body, with reference to our body, sometimes we have to use heater, sometimes we have to use the air conditioner. But our focus and attention should always be on that consciousness which is apart. So the wise person who has understood that to be apart and identified with that consciousness, he becomes free from these pairs of opposites. Doesn't matter whatever happens. Victory, defeat, success, failure remains same, not get affected. Not that he doesn't go through those experiences, but he will not be affected by them. That's what it means. This is the result of knowing that consciousness. Not knowing that consciousness, knowing that consciousness as your own true nature. Because if all this has come from that, that means all this is in essence that only. This is that. Tat Tvam Asi. This individual, cross body, subtle body, the combination is that. So now that you know this is that, you can think yourself to be this or you can think yourself to be that. If you think yourself to be this, you are having limited idea about yourself. So everything will be limited accordingly. If you identify with that and know that you are that and you identify with that as you, then everything will be infinite and unlimited. Nothing can affect you. So all this is there in this verse. Pretya asmat loka amrta bhavanti. Mrita means death. Amrita means beyond death. Amrita bhavanti means what? He knows that he is or she is amrita. Amrita means beyond death. Beyond death means beyond birth. That which had a birth will have to have death. All of us have an expiry date. Just don't know our date, that's all. So that which is amrita means that which is beyond birth. So then, what does it mean? This birth is only a manifestation. This birth is only what? Appears to be. Really speaking, I am not born. This world is not born. That's why in the Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, 9th chapter, where he discusses tattva. See, what Upanishad says in just one or two words, Bhagavad Gita gives chapters. In the 7th chapter and the 9th chapter, he beautifully talks about this. He says, this has come from that, or world has come from me. Then he says, world is in me, I am not in the world. Then he says, world is also not in me. First he accepts, this world has come from me. Then he says, the world is dependent on me. That's in me, I am not in them. Then he says, the world is not there only in me. Similarly, when he says, amrita, means what? World has not come, I have not come, it is all my thinking. I am thinking like that. It's all in my thinking. Straight away in your first class, if I told you this, you would have not come to my other classes. I think most of you have been attending my sessions for almost 10 years now. If I told this in the beginning only, you would have said, I leave this guy. So that's why we do Upanishads in the end. 7th chapter and 9th chapter also comes much later. The first few chapters, he doesn't discuss all that. He says how to act, how to become successful, this, that, very good, very good. Then you get into Bhagavad Gita. Then slowly, slowly when you get in, finally he says all this is madness, nothing is there. Simply sit down. Which means what? Just by thinking all this is created. So if you can quieten your thoughts and be without thoughts, you catch it. So if you understand all this, then what will happen is slowly, slowly, this running around, doing this, doing that, all this will go away. Ye karna wo karna. That doesn't mean you will not be dynamic. In the areas that you involve and do, you will be dynamic. You are not going to be a guy who will withdraw and run away. So this philosophy needs to be understood correctly. So therefore he says the wise having completely freed and risen above this world become immortal. Become immortal doesn't mean they were before mortal. They understood that they have never been mortal. It's madness. We have thought, that's why in Vedanta when you address anybody as body itself means you are actually committing a sin. If you address anybody as this body, na, that means you are committing sin. When you have love, even an object, you give the status of a being. The object, your home, is given name. Present, Magnolia, Vrindavan. Holy home. All sorts of names we give. Because we love that object. It is just a house made of bricks. But you love it so much that you give it a name. It becomes being. But when you lustfully look at a chicken, which is a being, it's a very tasty protein. You reduce it to a product. It's a being, but you reduce it to a product because you're looking at it lustfully. If you look at an object with love, you raise it to the status of a being. If you look at a being with lust, then you reduce it to an object. So, to look at any being as the body means you have reduced it to the state of mortality. That is sin. We think sin means this, that. This particular action is sinful. So, this word brahmacharya also is highly misunderstood. Celibacy. Brahmacharati iti brahmacharya. Walking in the path of Brahman. So, it is understood differently. So, why I am saying all this in this context is, immortal, he becomes immortal. He becomes immortal doesn't mean he was mortal before, now he has become immortal. He has always been immortal. But due to his conditionings, his thought, he thought himself to be mortal and he considered everybody to be mortal and therefore his relationship was at the lust level and that is sin. Our actions with reference to going and getting the material world also is an act of lust only. We don't do it with love. Once you gain this and become immortal means what? In the world, when you are part of this drama, you will be doing the same thing. You will probably get into the car and go to the office and do that. But thereafter it's not the play of lust anymore. Thereafter it's a play of love. And in game of love, you lose. Only in the game of lust you want to dominate and win. When you become spiritual, please understand this, you lose. Swami Ramakrishna says the way to gain anything is to lose it. When you play with your son or grandson, grandchildren, you will purposely lose. They'll shoot you. You lie down on the ground as if you are dead. And they'll all laugh. I shot grandmother, grandmother. They're sitting and enjoying. Then you wake up. So, they get excited thinking that they defeated you. And your joy is far superior in losing to them. The real joy is when you lose your ego. Going and trying to prove your point, you are a stupid fellow. No spiritual person does that. But we all do that sometimes. Because we have not really understood the way that evolved people play this game of life. We are actually living this life. We don't live. So there is so much of lust to play. There is so much of domination. There is so much of this and that. It's aggression. There is no peace. So here he says he becomes immortal. That one word immortal means what? He realized that he has always been immortal. She has always been immortal. This mortality is something that came. And if I am immortal, everyone is immortal. So then, in Tamil when they use these words, they say Atmartha. Atmartha means from Atma the relationship will be. Even when that relationship is with an object, it will be Atmartha. I am forgetting that quote from Jesus Christ, I think, touched the stone and blood came out of it, something like that. So Lord Byron wrote, she met her master and blushed. That's all she wrote. I'm forgetting that quote of Jesus, where he brought blood out of stone or something. And then Lord Byron wrote in his college or somewhere, he just wrote after some time, one line, and he stood first. The material met her master and she blushed. What it means is, when the instrument is held by a person with love, it does wonders. That is karma yoga. When you touch an object also, you touch it with love. It becomes alive. Same bat, when Tendulkar holds it and I hold it, it performs magic in his hand. It's not just because he knows technique. It is not heavy. That guy, when you look at him, I am also short, but I think he's shorter than me, or maybe my height. But he carries the heaviest bat. When he touches it, he's touching it with love. I think when he touches it with love, that heaviness reduces like this. If I will touch, I'll touch it with fear. My God, who's going to come and bowl? So this, it's the beauty of what he's saying. They become immortal. When they become immortal, they reverberate with love. Oneness. That is immortality. Otherwise, it's not immortality. When they touch it with that love feeling, anything that they do, they are not going with aggression to win this. In fact, the fact that they lost the ego so much, that everything flocks to them, gets attracted to them, everything works in their hands. Even when Lord Rama had to break that Dhanush, Shiv Dhanush, everybody came, all great guys only. They came to break it, but now nobody could break it. So they're trying to come to win and dominate. And when Lord Rama touches it, he's able to lift now. Other fellows are not even able to lift it. When he touches it, he lifts it very easily. So it's in the person who touches it. It's in me. It's inside me. It's not outside. So he or she becomes immortal by questioning all this and not taking sides of pleasure, and as a result rises above victory and defeat. He has gone beyond victory and defeat, and therefore even in a loss he is a winner. There are other fellows who have won the game but they are losers. Some of them who have won the Wimbledon or any tournament for that matter, we keep on talking about the guy next tournament when it starts, next world, defending champion. And this fellow is so tense because he wants to defend that championship. So even being a winner, you remain a loser once you're attached to it. Once you're detached, even in loss, you are winner. Because you are winner because victory and defeat cannot win over you. You have won over victory and defeat. So you are a permanent winner in spite of losing. Since you have not won over winning or losing, in spite of winning, you are a loser. So we don't understand who is a real winner. And Lord Buddha, you know, when he was Prince Siddhartha, he was participating in a chariot race. He was coming first. And there was another guy who was coming very close to him, wanted to beat him and win the cup. And Siddharth saw that. This guy wants to terribly win somehow. He's desperate. So he could have easily crossed the line, but he pulled his horse and allowed the other fellow to win. So now who is the winner? Many times you see these things, isn't it? Even in Olympics and all this, you see, the guy who's been running before, running in front of you, probably got hurt or something and is struggling. So some of the guys who have come far behind, they know that guy could have won but for his injury. So they don't want to cross the guy. They come, take him and make him cross the line and say, you are the winner. See, that shows your character. Even recently, Hardik Pandya, when he got that, you know, man of the match and man of the series award in Australia, in the T20 championship, he said, no, the real champion is T. Natarajan, who's come from such a small village in Tamil Nadu, bowled so wonderfully well. He just came as a net bowler, not even part of the team. He just came to bowl to the players to practice in the net. And then one of the main bowlers got injured or something, he was brought. And he performed so well. Everybody is talking about him now. And Hardik Pandya said, I could have been given this award, but in my eyes, he is the champion. See, to say that, you should be above this award. You can't say it otherwise. That shows your character. That shows you're a winner. Doesn't matter you lose the match. How does it matter? Everybody has to lose something. As I said, even when you see tennis, you know, 6-2, 6-4, 6-3, Djokovic won against his own so player, you'll say. That means what? 2 games he lost? No. 6-2 means he lost 2 games, 6 games he won. 6-3 means 3 games he lost, 6 games he won. So somewhere you'll lose. So this sports is only teaching us what? It's teaching us what this Vedanta is teaching. Arre Baba, in life you will lose, doesn't matter, but be a winner. We do this with our children, we do this with our spouse, we do this with our parents, with our colleagues. All the time trying to win and prove a point and bloody losing our relationship. Sorry for my language. That's how it is. It's really bloody. Our life becomes so bloody. That's what the Upanishads are saying. The Upanishads are talking about practical living. But they talk from that height. We need to dilute it. So that word immortal, if you ponder, then what is that immortal? Life becomes immortal when you live like that. It's always alive, isn't it? Immortal means what? Always alive. Mortal means alive for a while and then die. Our relationship today is like that. How to keep our relationships immortal? When you learn to lose your ego. The main thing in relationship is to divide sorrow and multiply joy. If you are a strong person relating, you would not share your sorrow with the other person. You would be happy when the other person is celebrating. And when the other person is sad, you will go and try to give them solace. So, if you analyze as to what is immortality, what is strength, what is that, it is nothing but love. It is nothing but losing. To lose, you need courage. To be a winner in life, you got to lose your ego. So we all have conquered many things in life and have lots of cups in our house. This I won, that I won, but in life we are losers. If you go to great sages, they may not have any cups. They may have nothing in their house, but they are winners of life. Ramana Maharishi had nothing. He didn't want to keep anything. You know, I went to visit Ramana Maharishi's ashram. I stayed there for 2 days. Very basic facility, simple. I enjoyed thoroughly. There, everybody sits and eats together. Doesn't matter who you are. For some people, they'll sit on the floor. Some people who can't sit on the floor, they put table. Everybody eats together. That's how Ramana Maharishi used to eat it. And once when Ramana Maharishi was so weak physically, one of his devotees said, Swamiji, you look so, you know, weak. I'm going to give you chavanprash. You have to eat it. And he sent him some big dabba chavanprash. So, they gave him one spoon of chavanprash, it seems. He tasted it. And he said, hey, it tastes very nice. He distributed it to everyone. This is how the masters live. They don't live just for themselves. is immortal, no? What? See, however, I can finish this verse and go to the next verse, but we have to understand what that immortal is. If we want to make our relationships immortal, alive all the time, if these Upanishads will have to be practically helping us in life, then we got to see what is the outcome of achieving this immortality. What is that you are going to win by, you know, there is this movie that, what is that called? Lage Rakho Munna Bhai. In that, Munna Bhai's friend, what is that guy's name? In the character? Anyway, doesn't matter. Those two fellows, some argument comes, and the Munna Bhai slaps the guy. Sarkit, something like that. Beats him, slaps him. And then they will be sitting together and drinking and all that, but they won't talk to each other. And this guy imagines, the Munna Bhai imagines about Mahatma Gandhi coming and talking to him. So that time he's talking to Bapu. He says, what should I do now? This has happened between us. And Bapu says, you are strong? Do you think you are strong, Munna Bhai? You think you are strong? He says, yes. So, is it tough to say sorry or is it easy to say sorry? It is of course tough. So, if you are strong, you should be able to say sorry. If you are weak, you cannot say sorry. So, even when you say sorry, you are not weak. You are actually strong. To be able to say sorry, you need to be strong. And some people cannot say that. They are not strong. They are all weak fellows. They are not immortal. They are mortal. Why is Nelson Mandela still strong? Still immortal? His name is still immortal, no? We have this road in Delhi named after him. Nelson Mandela Road. Goes to Vasant Kunj from Vasant Vihar. Everywhere we have his name. Why? Go and see that movie Invictus. In that movie Invictus, they show that he was put in jail for 26 or 27 years. Just for what? For wanting to get freedom for his people and himself. And they put him in jail for 27 years in the 6x6 size room. It is somewhere, you have to go from Cape Town. So, people go and visit that nowadays. 6x6. He lived 27 years. And when they got freedom, all these guys gang up and they want to throw away the whites and all that. They want to show what they can do to them and send them away, and they wanted the country to be just blacks. Then Nelson Mandela says, if we do that, that means I am defeated. Our purpose is defeated. We haven't got freedom. I wanted to get freedom from this thought that we can deal with people from the skin level. Even today, I mean, Nelson Mandela said that long time ago. Now, what is the thing that is trending? Black Lives Matters. And where? So-called developed nation. So-called developed nation, America, the fellows are still have to fight for Black Lives Matter. What kind of a madness is this? What kind of a developed country? I don't understand this. How can you identify with a person with the skin and discriminate? It is just incredible. With reference to skin, with reference to sex, with reference to creed, caste, community, we are constantly discriminating. All of us. Morning we are studying Upanishad, but throughout the day we are discriminating. Immortal means, what is immortal? The color is not immortal. Color changes. But the Atma is immortal. So he becomes immortal. Means he goes beyond all this nonsense. So therefore Nelson Mandela says, yaar, I fought for freedom, not just from Britishers, from this thought that human beings can dominate human beings. Even dominating animals is madness. But trying to dominate another human being is even, that means you need psychological treatment. So this is what he said. We haven't really got freedom. So then they accepted, and then he, you know, now the South Africa which is there now, there is whites, there is blacks, there is Indians. But how much of that discriminatory thoughts have gone, I don't know. Many could have gone, in some it may still be lingering. But till that time we haven't gotten over such thoughts, we haven't attained freedom. See, lot of us, we think liberation, moksha, this, that. We have our own concepts. Moksha means we will be, one viman will come when we are about to die in the ICU. Only you will see that viman. And then God has sent one devata. And the devata is sitting, telling, come on, get in. You get in and then you are taken there. You will be there. Nothing like that happens. Immortality has to be experienced here. If you have these things, you will experience that immortality. Otherwise, you are not going to experience that immortality here. The love is immortal. That capacity to lose your ego, that's immortal. Not to take sides with pleasure, that is immortal. That is what the word immortal means. Otherwise we are not born again. Then somebody asks, why should I not be born again? What is wrong in being born again? I refuse to limit myself and refuse to limit anybody else based on caste, creed, color, community, sex, etc. Based on gender, based on species, I refuse to discriminate. If you have that kind of a strength, then you are immortal person. And such a person can never harm any being. How can you harm yourself? Will you harm yourself? By mistake, if your finger touched your eyes, you poked. Sometimes it happens, you know. Something you were pulling and your own fingers could have hurt your eyes. Will you go and chop your fingers? How are we getting that feeling of hatred? That's why in the 12th chapter of the Gita, when he talks about a bhakta, bhakta means one who is in spiritual field. What does he say? He says, advesha sarva bhutana. One who hates no being. Ultimate bhakta is a jnani. Ultimate jnani is a bhakta. They merge and the individuality is merged in the indivisible. And when the individuality is merged in indivisible, there is nothing apart from me. Everything is one. When everything is one, where is the question of hatred? So, ahimsa, everything comes automatically. So, what we therefore need to understand is, he or she who questions this and raises about them becomes immortal, means all these conditionings based on caste, creed, color, community, everything is in one go washed and thrown up. That's why they say newborn. The person is born again. Twice born. Brahmana is twice born. First we are born in the conditionings, then we drop the conditionings and we are again born in the unconditioned consciousness, the pure consciousness. That person is a brave fellow. All the other fellows, they are not brave. So remember this, brave means viveka. Without viveka it is not bravery, it is stupidity. Buddhi nashat pranashyati says the Bhagavad Gita. So now if you see, this verse is a fascinating verse that he gives, stotrasya shrotram. And the year of the year is the same concept that is repeated again. Manaso mano, vachoha vachahum, pranasya prana, akshusha chakshu. So this prana that we are having, and this prana, apana, samana, vyana, udana, they are also insentient. Remember that. They are also dependent on that Pratama prana. The main prana. That is Atma. This is the source. That lives without this prana. We can't live. This body cannot live without this prana. In Tamil, when somebody dies, they say pranam purch. Pranam purch means prana is gone. This prana, subtle body has left this gross body. That ultimate prana doesn't leave anything. And that ultimate prana, for it to exist, doesn't require this prana. But for this prana to enliven the body, requires the support of that prana. So this prana with small p is dependent. That prana with capital P is independent. So if you gain this knowledge and you identify with that capital P prana, then what? You will also remain independent in life. In any, with reference to anything, material objects, physical body, you know, emotional relationships, and intellectual censure or praise, everything we can become free from. The way to free from all this is by gaining the knowledge that you are immortal, that you are never born. So this big lie that we have been believing and it has become so true for us today is this, I am born. You are immediately given one birth certificate and then, you know, citizenship. All this is our clear conditionings. From the practical level, you need all this for transactional things. You apply for any visa. Sometimes when we have to travel for lectures, we apply for visa. They ask for your father's birth certificate. I think for UK visa they ask. My father died when I was 4 years old. I don't even know. Somehow later on I found out that he also had one birth certificate. I never applied for the visa. So, in the practical sense, you need all this samasha going on. But don't allow those things to condition you. If you condition, then you can't remain immortal. What's the point in attaining immortality afterwards? While living, we should be immortal. That is the capacity to not to get conditioned by this. That is why Shrotrasya, ear of the ear. Become absolutely independent. So this, what he said in this verse, last week we did only half of this verse, that's why I went on in more detail with the effect of this knowledge today. So the second half of this shloka, this mantra. Next week, we'll see what he explains, what he said in this verse in detail. The rest of the verses in this chapter is that only. Let's conclude now. Om Purnamadha Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyaiva Buddhyatmana Va Prakrite Swabhavat Karomi Adhyat Sakalam Parasmai Narayanayeti samarpayami.